The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 144 for March 3rd, 2008. Greetings, folks. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton here with John Braun. How are you, John?
Good, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. So we had an interesting week. You know, every week as we finish up the show, we say, you know, tomorrow might be the day Apple might release those new MacBook Pros. And, you know, I got to my desk and there were like six emails and, you know, a bunch of notes in on Twitter saying the store's been down for a couple hours. And sure enough, when it came back up, those new MacBook Pros were there. And I promptly set about ordering one. And I know you did, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mine actually arrived today, but I really haven't had time to mess with it a whole lot. And I know yours hasn't arrived yet at all, John. So we'll talk a little bit about kind of the ordering process and the thought process behind why we ordered what we ordered. And then next week, I'm going to be down in Austin for South by Southwest. And traveling, it's always more challenging to do a show where we play listener comments and blend all that stuff in because I'm not here in the podcast console, if you will. So perhaps next week we can do a show while I'm in Austin and we can talk about our experiences with our new machines. But for now, let's talk about what we ordered. Now, funnily enough, we both actually ordered almost exactly the same thing. So, John, why don't you tell us what you got?
And this will lead to another discussion. So,
yes,
15-inch. And the higher end machine, because what I wanted to get was the extended VRAM, but then I figured, you know, I want to bump it up a little too. So I got the 2.6 option,
yep,
which was a few hundred more. I got the glossy screen just because, you know, ever since I've been using Dell with a 17-inch glossy screen, I actually like it. You know, the color looks nicer and it's brighter and all that. I mean, you do lose a little something having an anti-glare, but it is anti-glare. So it really depends on if you can, you know, deal with it. Some people look over my shoulder and say, how can you stand that? And I'm like, stand what? Because I just tune it out. So,
right.
But some people, the glare will drive them insane. So, got the 2 gigs of RAM because I don't really want to pay a premium to get special Apple RAM, which I don't think is special. And then I went for size. I got the 250 gig, 5400 drive. I think there was a 7200 RPM drive, but I opted for space. And then the rest is pretty standard, except I got the remote because I've never had a machine with an Apple remote.
There you go. Yeah, so I ordered almost exactly the same thing. I did go with the 2.6. Now, I had, you know, I was an ADC member, so am an ADC member, because I bought it along with my WWDC pass last year. That's one of those shows where we don't get press access. I don't think anyone does. At least we don't. So I... But what that did was it got me a hardware discount. So my, you know, $400 ADC discount netted me a hardware discount that with the MacBook Pro, and I actually bought a terabyte time capsule that we'll talk about too. But the two of them together, I saved almost $600. So it totally paid for the ADC membership. The new MacBook Pro that I got, same deal as John. I was going to go with the 2.4, then saw that it was half the VRAM of the 2.5. I do plug it into a cinema display for the most part at my desk. So I figured, you know, let's just bump it up. We're getting the discount anyway. So I bumped it up to the 2.5. And then at that point, it was a couple hundred bucks to go to the 2.6. And why not? Right. So I did that. I did the same thing as you, John. I bought it with the base RAM. I would have bought it with no RAM if I could have. But bought it with that. And then bought third-party RAM. I bought the 2 gig kit from Otherworld Computing. I think you did exactly the same thing.
As did I.
Yeah.
And both do the trade back.
Yeah. So OWC's got this great thing. You pay 90, I think it was $95, $95.98, I think is what it came to. And they send you two 2 gig chips. You'd pull out your two 1 gig chips out of the MacBook Pro that Apple sends you. And then you send those chips back to OWC and they'll give you $10 a piece. So it costs you $75 to upgrade the machine from 2 gigs to 4 gigs of RAM. And that's a no brainer to me. So that's what I did. I opted for the matte screen or the non glossy screen, which interestingly enough is the default now. It was not prior. I think that that has switched. I was on the fence about it while I was kind of putting the order together. And the thing that really pushed me over the edge was I realized, you know, I'm going to have this thing sitting right next to my cinema display all day. To have one glossy screen and one not glossy screen, that will drive me crazy. So that was the deciding factor for me. So that's it. You want to, let's see. So you ordered it. You ordered a time capsule as well. Is that right, John? A terabyte?
Yeah. And that's, hit Alaska. So it's coming. So yeah, you and I both got the same one. So I should have that by the end of the week. Hopefully my machine by the end of the week. I did get the extra battery and the world travel adapter kit. Yeah, I opted for the faster shipping, which I guess for stuff that's located in the U.S., it probably makes sense because one of my items shipped West Coast and one East Coast. But the computers, it doesn't seem to really impact. Though I probably ordered when the demand was starting to build.
Right.
Dave?
Yeah, I ordered mine within an hour of them being live on the store. And mine shipped, I think, Friday, early Friday morning, late Thursday night, and obviously arrived here today. Now, I chose standard shipping, and it was because I'd remembered in the past that stuff coming from the factories overseas, it doesn't seem to matter what kind of shipping you choose. It all gets shipped international priority, direct distribution, I believe. And I think you saw the same thing, right, John? Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, last week we had... Along these lines, is there anything else specifically with regards to these machines that we want to talk about, John?
No, I think we covered our rationale. I think we may talk a little later about some more philosophy behind that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So there was a question that we answered last week, and I think we confuse things a little. I'm gonna play one audio comment. We got many, many emails and audio comments about this, so I know we confuse things a little bit. Let's play the comment, then we'll talk about it.
Hi, John and Dave. I was just listening to your advice on whether to get a faster CPU or more RAM in a new Mac. And I wanted to lend a little bit of advice that I give my customers, and that is the CPU can't be changed in a lot of these devices. And Apple charges phenomenally high prices for their RAM. And it's not that difficult to swap. So I always say get the fastest CPU you can afford. In fact, if Apple could take the RAM out of the machine and take $200 off, I'd be happy with that too, because you can buy 4 gigs of RAM for that much. Have a nice day.
Yeah, and I think that as is evidenced by what the path John and I took here, we agree. The question we answered last week was, if you had to pick one or the other, what's going to be the thing that gives you the most speed or efficiency on your Mac? And at that point, I think both, correct me if I'm wrong, John, but to me, I certainly believe that RAM is going to buy you more in the day-to-day stuff than CPU speed will.
Yes.
But you're right. When ordering a new machine, yeah, don't buy Apple's RAM. I certainly won't, I know you didn't either, John. And I agree. If you can afford both, well, then do both. Absolutely. Absolutely. You have anything you want to add there, John?
I think we tossed this around a bit, and actually have a benchmark here in front of me. But, I'm looking at the relative benchmark scores that you get with the new line of machines. And when you look, I mean, the benchmarks, they get better as you get faster. Buy as much as you can afford, but if you want to shave a couple, I don't know. So I guess I'd say it depends. Because, you saw these benchmarks here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're talking about a Macworld article?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree, buy it if you can.
There you go.
The extra. But I guess in our case also, the one deciding factor is that the VRAM was not flexible.
Right.
And then couldn't get like the slowest clock speed and lots of VRAM. So.
Yeah, and that's why there's that $500 retail difference between the 2.4 15-inch and the 2.5 15-inch. It's not just, 0.1 gigahertz or 100 megahertz to you and me. It's that you're going up with the amount of VRAM. So,
and I think Apple does that just to make life maybe not easier for the customer, or maybe, but easier for them because, well, you remember the bad old days when there were like, you know, 100 different models of desktop Macs, or what were they then?
The Scully and Emilio days, the Performa days?
The Performas, yes. Dude. I think some of the 030 machines where they had the Performa 520 and 530 and 7. I think there were 100 models at one point. It was just, it was crazy. So, yeah. You know, kudos to the current team for simplifying it. Yeah, and I guess, you know, if you're going to get more VRAM, you probably want more processor.
Yeah, well, it, yeah, I mean, yeah, one or the other. I think they're just lumping it together. Really, I think it's trying to get it, you know, that under $2,000 price point and then move up from there. And if you're willing to move up, okay, well, now it's clear you want more stuff. All right, our first sponsor for this show is Smile on My Mac at smileonmymac.com and their product PDF Pen. Now, PDF Pen is a $50 utility. It allows you to go out and pretty much massage the heck out of any PDF that you have or any files that you have. You can take multiple PDFs, pull pages out, reorder them. You know, I've talked about it before. I use it constantly. I used it at least twice today to take my signature and paste it into a form instead of having to print it and sign it and scan it back in. Really, really handy utility. Of course, it was a Mac Observer Editor's Choice Award at Macworld Expo, and we were happy to give that to him. And I don't know if you've ever had to deal with Smile on My Mac support, John, but anytime I've written them, even when they didn't know, you know, even if I didn't play the Do You Know Who I Am card, they've always been very, very helpful to me. And they actually sent a bunch of testimonials from other customers showing that I'm not the only one. And that's a good thing. Customer support is a very important thing. And they take that very seriously there, too. SmileOnMyMac.com PDF Pen for $49.95. And of course, you can download a free trial by visiting SmileOnMyMac.com. So last week, John, we were in the middle of the show and I got a phone call that I just had to take, right? And it was about that iMac. And, you know, I did not come off that call very happy because
the iMac that would not die.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's kind of an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah. you know, so I was really kind of upset because those Apple engineers, you know, the tier two, I got to tier two tech support. They actually took the case to the Apple engineers. The Apple engineers were looked at it, sat on it, whatever they did for 5 days. Then they gave some answers back to tier two, and it was tier two that called me. And, you know, the answers were cop out answers. And I was really kind of upset by this. And so the next day I decided, you know, I know the path to take here and I'm going to take it. So I called the main Apple number the next morning and I asked for customer relations, not customer support, customer relations. And I got a customer relations staffer and I told him, I said, look, you know, I've got this case number. I want to go through this with you. And so the woman was great. She took the case. Now these people are like customer service ninjas. Okay. You could, and I didn't, but you could scream and yell at these people all day long and they, oh yeah, thank you, Mr. Hamilton. That's great. You know, we really appreciate the thoughts you have about my mother and you know, that whole thing, right? They're totally fine with that stuff. Masters at customer service. You can't shake these people, but that's good, right? Every company needs these kind of people. So, you know, I called them and I explained the situation, showed them the case number. And my goal at that point was to simply get their machine replaced. And the reason is I don't care how many motherboards we replace in that iMac. I don't think it would ever work properly with an iSight connected because the iSight's a flawed device. But Apple doesn't have a non-flawed iSight type device. And so I figured, you know what? This machine's been through the ringer. It's been to repair three or more times. And I believe that's the magic number from all the research I've done. And I thought, you know, let's just get this done because I'm fighting with it and they're jerking me around. So called customer relations, explained all this to them, showed them that, yes, I took this path and I've been happy to deal with it. And I said, look, at this point, I'm happy to go one more round with your engineers. But frankly, I don't think they have anything more to offer because the answers that they gave me were cop-out answers. And I explained that. I said, at this point, it seems to me the only reasonable solution is to replace the machine. That didn't come out accidentally. I did not wait for them to suggest to replace the machine. I didn't fish around for it. I stated it specifically because I know that's how it works there. You have to do that. If you believe, if you have a machine that A, has AppleCare on it, that's the important part. B, has been replaced or not replaced, repaired three or more times with hardware issues and still has an ongoing problem, then you can, you know, that's their criteria for replacement. I also believe that, you know, it being a machine that you use every day, explaining that it's critical to what you do, that certainly doesn't hurt. So I explained all this to them. I was truthful about it, but I wasn't waiting for them to suggest, yeah, go ahead. Maybe we should replace it. I told them I wanted to replace it. The woman said, she clarified. She said, okay, in your mind, the only acceptable solution is to replace the machine. I said, that's right. She said, give me 5 minutes. I was on hold, you know, happy ha-ha music, whatever it was, come back. And she says, you know, I've reviewed your case. No problem. We'll replace the machine now. And here's the rub. We don't replace the machine with a refurb. Now, this was a G5 20-inch iMac. She replaced it with, it was a 2 gigahertz G5 20-inch iMac. So she replaced it with a 2 gigahertz iMac. It just so happens that it's the aluminum variety with a Core 2 Duo in it. And of course, the built-in eyesight. So that sort of bypasses all the issues that I had. And now that machine actually is right here. It's the one that hopefully, if all is going well, is recording this podcast for us. So it all worked out fine. I ordered that machine about, well, not ordered, but got that process in place about 3 or 4 hours after I ordered my MacBook Pro. That machine arrived the very next day, ready to go. No problem. Then I just shipped the other one back to him. So it is important to understand how valuable AppleCare can be when you've got a machine that's having problems, or if you're having problems with a machine. So it, you know, that alone makes AppleCare worthwhile. And the beautiful part is AppleCare is not over. They'll actually give me a credit for the AppleCare for the remainder of the period that I didn't use. You still with me, John?
Yep. I love AppleCare. It's mm-hmm. always been good to me. Yeah, I had a similar path because, yeah, we went back and forth each time. And, yeah, at one point it was like, you know, you're losing money every second you're talking to me. You realize this.
Yeah, that's right. That's
plus, absolutely. You kind of have to solve my problem. And, yeah, so I had a tech who, you know, saw a reasonable path here.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, no, they're pretty good. So, yeah, AppleCare. And I guess... you've noted, Dave, that there are quite a few places you can get it.
Yeah, I've never bought AppleCare from Apple. You know, on a laptop, I think it's $350 from Apple, which is, to me, you know, that's a lot of money. I've always bought it from a company called Expercom at expercom.com. And they have AppleCare for laptops for $279. So that's $80 less than what you'd pay for Apple. It's the same AppleCare. What you get is... you buy it from Expercom and they ship you a boxed kit. And really all that the box kit has in it that's valuable, I guess it's got TechTool Pro and all that, or TechTool. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the magic number that you then go online and register with Apple, and that enhances the security or the support path on your system. Now, AppleCare also covers the Airport Extreme, any Airport Extreme cards that you buy, any Airport Express or Airport Extreme base stations, a time capsule, and then of course if you have a MacBook Air with a SuperDrive and or Apple RAM, and if you have a laptop and you buy it with an Apple monitor, it covers that too. So AppleCare is pretty far reaching, and it's pretty cool. If you know if you bought an Airport Extreme base station last year and you buy a computer this year, and you put AppleCare on it, it actually goes back and covers that base station. So it can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I opted to buy it because I bought it under an employee discount program. I think the same thing with an educational discount is, I think they just automatically do it because I don't know if I'm going to get a certificate or something, but, you know, since they obviously know the serial number of the machine, they can do it all at the same time. So I'll have to see what happens if I get anything in the mail.
Yeah.
Or at some point, maybe when I register it or something.
All right. You know, last week, John, we talked about sparse images and Scott Barman explained what the sparse image was and how it grows. And I started wondering, you know, I keep a lot of my documents. I've kind of just distributed my main documents folder and I store it on my iDisk. And what I do with that is I have my iDisk set to sync on all the computers that I use here. So I have my documents folder. It just magically exists on all my machines. It's really, really cool. And it actually works very well for me anyway. But I started wondering, okay, well, how is that data getting backed up? I know that the way it works is the iDisk cloning is stored as a sparse image. I think it's in home library file sync, and then there's a sparse bundle in there. You know, how does this work? Well, apparently Time Machine backs up that sparse bundle, but even if you change files within the bundle, it doesn't re-back up the entire thing. It actually backs it up in slices. And the most, the largest slice is 8 megabytes. So if you're only changing a couple of files on there, you're not backing up the whole thing over and over again. You're just backing up that slice. Now, if you want to go into your sparse bundle and pull files out, you can't. You have to recover the entire sparse bundle from whatever backup point you want, and then open it like any other disk image and pull the files out. So it's not quite perfect in that regard, but it is backing up different iterations of your sparse bundle without actually backing up, you know, multiple gigabyte files every single time.
Mm.
So I thought that was kind of interesting to find out, and I wanted to share that. You got
that peg geek meter, I think.
I think it does peg the geek meter. I like pegging the geek meter. All right, so let's peg another meter, John, and tell them about our second sponsor for this show is Audible. Of course, the magic link is audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab, and that'll get you a 2-week free trial and 1 free audiobook. And I think, John, you went and found us an audiobook to talk about this time.
But it's not for everybody, okay? I'll have to warn you.
Okay.
This is for the wee ones. What I found is that they have, so I searched around. I'm like, you know, how extensive is their collection? And I found The Cat in the Hat by Dr. Seuss.
That's awesome.
See, oh, Kelsey Grammer reads it. And oh, okay.
Should we listen to Kelsey Grammer? Our friend Fraser from Cheers and Fraser. Okay. Let's see, what do we have here? I thought we had it. You know, sometimes audio hijack, maybe I'm not the right guy to manage things here. What do we have? Yeah, we've got it hijacked. Should be working. Nothing. Yep. All right, well, we'll let that go. Yeah, that's what you get for live to tape, folks. All right, so, well, you can go to audible.com and listen to this. Kelsey reads The Cat in the Hat for you. But audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab is the place that you'd go if you actually want to download this book for free. Thanks, John.
Kids will love it.
I love that. I think it's great. If
no, I think it's one of the timeless kids' tales.
I agree. All right. We have an email moving on to the standard section of the show. We have an email from Jim, and Jim writes, okay, another .Mac syncing problem. I usually can figure these issues out, but I am syncing between several computers, 3 to be exact, and everything syncs just fine with the exception of address book. Now, I don't know if using Bento is screwing things up or what, but Calendar, Yojimbo, Soho Notes, etc. all sync just fine. Address book doesn't. Any ideas on this one? All right. You have any thoughts on this before I dig into my crazy .Mac sync mojo?
Yeah, what I'm going to say is that, I think there was a suggestion in here that Bento may be doing something.
Okay.
Yeah, the only thing I suggest there is that there is, every now and then, and I think this is kind of a funny thing, I hate to pick on a FileMaker in Bento, But if you look at this, there's a version. There has been a version update, and what I think is funny about a lot of updates is they'll say things here like updates include, and like here's a line that caught my eye: improves file import. Which to me, well, what does that mean, Dave?
Well, that means that it didn't work before,
or worked in some strange and unpredictable manner. Yeah, and there's several of those. But, you know, kudos to them for updating it. So the first thing is that, you know, a lot of times an app will ask you, do you want me to phone home or
right,
all that. But, yeah, sometimes, I mean, you know, they may do weird things like import or export and maybe kind of scramble the data a little bit. So, but I'll let you go at a deeper level.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a .Mac sync guy. I live that way. And So there's a couple of things you got to do. First is you got to notice that there's a problem. And this is my one gripe with, well, not my one. I make it sound like there's only one. This is one of my gripes with .Mac Sync is that it doesn't tell you when it has any problems. In fact, the only way you'd know if there was a problem is A, to notice that something's not syncing right, which really is almost too late. Or B, if you go and look at a there's a log file. Now, you can do this from the terminal if you're so inclined, or you can do it from the console application. And the log is in home, which is the tilde, /library/logs/sync/.macsync.log. And this log's pretty helpful. It's fairly plain English, and you can sort of look through it and get a feel for how it's working. If there's a problem, it's going to tell you. And it's pretty verbose about it without being overly chatty. So this is the place to look. But if you're having a problem, the thing that I found is find the machine that has the data most like what you want the other machines to have. Go to System Preferences on that machine. Go to .Mac. Go to Advanced. And click the button that says Reset Sync Data. Now, at that point, you have a couple of choices. You can pick what sync data you're going to reset, and you get to pick which direction. So at this for this particular problem, only choose address book and tell it to replace the data on .Mac with the data from this computer. And it's pretty clearly spelled out, but before you click the magic button, take a step back, look at it, read it, make sure you haven't got it backwards, because if you do, there's no going back at that point, unless you've, you know, of course, backed it up with Time Machine or whatever it is you choose to back things up with. But at that point, then it'll go through. Then the rest of your machines will pop up alerts and say, the address book data on .Mac has been reset. Do you want to merge it, or do you just want to replace what we have here? And I always choose replace what we have here to just kind of push the change all the way through. Usually that's enough to get things rolling again for another, 4 to 6 weeks until it just stops and mysteriously stops again. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way it seems to roll. All right. Well, I'm sort of apprehensive about moving on to Don's question, not because I don't think we have a good answer. Actually, I'm very eager to hear you tell us your answer on this, John. My concern is that if Dr. Seuss's Cat in the Hat didn't want to play, I'm worried that iTunes might not. So we're going to click this button and see what happens. Hey.
Hey, John and Dave. Great show, as always. This is Don from Ohio calling with a quick question. I've got an iMac that has a 500 gigabyte internal hard drive in that I just recently put Leopard on, and I'm looking to use Time Machine. So this last weekend, I just picked up a Western Digital My Book, not the World Edition, just the standard My Book Western Digital hard drive that's a gigabyte in size. Plugged it into the USB port. I didn't get FireWire. I got FireWire. I got USB. I plugged it into the USB port and went to Disk Utility on the Mac. Initially, it didn't mount, and I didn't see my little icon on my desktop that it was mounted. So in Disk Utility, it was recognized, and of course, it was formatted in the MS-DOS format. So where my problem came is when I went in and I selected the volume, and I tried to format it to the Mac journaled initially, and then all the different Mac format options, the journal didn't work. Initially, what happens when I say erase, it starts the process, and about 10 seconds into it, it pops up and it says there was an error in formatting this drive. When I then go back in, it's still formatted as the MS-DOS format. When I go back in and partition it into just under 500 gigs into two partitions, I'm able to format those partitions fine. So my question is there something I need to do special to keep that as a 1 gigabyte partition? I'd like to use it again on my iMac, which has got a 500 gig internal drive, and use it for Time Machine to back that up, as well as to have some room for maintaining copies. So if there's something I'm doing wrong to format this 500 gig drive, please let me know. Or if I need to go into a special format or something to take a drive this large, I'd appreciate it. This is where you cut me off.
It is where we cut you off. And John, you've got the magic answer, I think.
I think I do, yeah. And I found an Apple discussion about this. And I think the problem here is stemming from, it sounds to me that what was purchased, it seemed fairly clear that it was a PC format drive. So I guess the thing is, keep your eyes peeled. I mean, in a lot of the retail stores, they may just stock the Windows version. But a lot of the vendors, as far as I can tell, Western Digital does have a Mac version of this drive. It may just be that the store was out. But where you got to look, it may not be entirely obvious, is if you go into Disutility, you click on the drive itself and there will be a partition tab. Where you may run into problems is that there's an options button, and it's not entirely clear that you should really be pressing that, but there are different partition schemes. And if the partition scheme and the format of the partition don't click, then you're going to see that sort of behavior where it just looks like it's working and then it quits. So, you know, you'd think they'd be able to detect that sort of thing, but apparently not. So, you know, I guess in the case of Intel machines, it went to be a GUID partition or Apple partition, but it probably came as master boot record, I would guess, if it was a DOS drive. That seems to be the default. So I think that's...
Yeah, I think that's the magic right there. I think that's it.
So, yeah, you got to be... It is still kind of weird, and I think, you know, the same sort of thing applies. Does it still apply to iPods? No, that may just be the older ones. I remember getting an older one that was formatted as PC, and the Mac said, it's formatted as PC. You want me to switch it?
Right.
Maybe it was the other way around. I think it was the other way around. I think I had a Mac one, and the PC, you know, said, eh. So I guess there's still those oddities between partition and format schemes that may not always click.
Yeah, that's right. Because you can have a partition that doesn't match the, you know, HFS or MS-DOS or GUID or any of that stuff. So, yeah, it gets a little squirrely. The thing that really mucks this all up, of course, is the whole Intel versus PowerPC architecture, because one is using the Apple partition map and the other is GUID. But
Of course.
We got to have something, right? I got to say, you know, John, we've used the dual G4, the mirrored drive door 1.42 gigahertz G4 to record and manage the podcast in the past. And it usually sits somewhere, you know, about 60-70% utilization on both CPUs while we're doing the show. We're humming along at a cool 12% right now. So it's nice to see this Intel machine doing what it's supposed to do. So sweet. All right, let's, you know, we've talked for the last two shows and now again, three in a row, we've talked about this multiple router thing. And I think we've answered all of the questions that, you know, I can tell how clearly we've explained something, you know, by the questions that you and I get, John. And obviously the first time we explained it, we created more questions than we answered, which was fine. We continued that last week. I think we've got one last round of issues to address with this, and I think they're valid, and it has to do with security, and I'll let Molly lead us into it, and you know, John, being our security geek, you're going to be the one to take us out of this. What's that?
Not really. Well,
you kind of are. All right, here we go.
Hello, this is Molly in Albuquerque, and I really enjoy your podcast, and I appreciated you doing that little segment on running two routers. I do have a question about the order that they're connected. The example that you gave, it was specific.
You know, there it is again, that whole jumpy thing that we get. I'm going to start Molly over here and see what we get, John.
Hello, this is Molly in Albuquerque, and I really enjoy your podcast. And I appreciated you doing that little segment on running two routers. I do have a question about the order that they're connected. The example that you gave, or maybe it was specifically instructions, I'm not sure, was to have, let's see here, like for a cable modem connected to the G router, and then to turn off the DHCP on the N router. As far as security is concerned, like my G, I need it to only do the old WEP because my TiVo only understands WEP, but I just soon keep the WPA for my in router. And so is there any difference in the order that you connect them as far as like letting the in router do the DHCP and using the stronger password on that, and then maybe as a secondary connection doing the G router with the weaker weaker security? Anyway, just wondered if that made any difference in terms of security for your overall system, and thanks for your help. Bye-bye.
All you, John.
So what I'd say, well, you can chime in, Dave,
okay.
But I would say in general, you know, you got to be worried about the weakest link. So it sounds like in this case, the weakest link is the WEP connection. WEP is an early, you know, I don't even know if you'd want to call it an encryption standard for wireless, which really was pretty easy to break. So the easiest is, you know, broadcasting your name and all of that stuff. WEP is at least block something. So, you know, see if they offer a software update or something. Though I think some of the older TiVos, that may not be an option, is that you don't have WEP, WPA, which is much preferred. You know, it's harder to get into. And I would say in general, I mean, every time, I mean, a bridge, you know, like Dave and I have been talking about, bridges provide no security. It's pretty much a, you know, one network can see the other. Every time you introduce a router, you can set up rules, and the, depending on the hardware, they can be simple, they can be complex. I mean, every time you put one of those in the way, it'll make it harder for whoever's trying to mess around with you to get further in. So the more routing and, you know, kind of non-public, kind of hard to figure out stuff, you know, special or bizarre ports or stuff like that, the more of that you put in the way, or firewalls, as long as they don't get in the way, you know, I would say is it should be the general approach. So like in my case, yeah, I have a WEP device coming in also. Yeah, it's an old print server. I should upgrade it. So that's the potential weakest link.
Right.
So that's about it. Yeah, it's not easy because a lot of times you have to balance the whole, you know, usability, you know, because a lot of it takes time to do this management and keeping track of things and all that. And so it's a, you know, it's not a quick and easy answer. I mean, if you've got a lot of time on your hands, then yeah, you could spend a lot of time mapping everything out. But, you know, I think the general strategy is make it, you know, not an attractive target and people will move on.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. Firewalls and any security stuff, it's always a balance of, you know, how willing are you to be locked out of your own systems, right? I mean, a firewall that can block someone else out blocks you from something. And you've got to be willing to play that. We had another question along these lines from Scott about multiple routers and firewalls, but John, I think you covered it all. So there's no reason to dig that back up here.
Yeah, I was on a roll.
No, it's good. No, it's that absolutely great. All right.
So we thank Scott for also asking something in that regard. Yeah. But hey, chime in if you have any more more, because I think it's more a resource and strategy.
Yeah, it really is. I've talked about it before, even recently, where, you know, that was my big issue with firewalls, especially the outbound stuff like Little Snitch. If you've got it with a novice user, it's not going to do anybody any good because you're not going to understand necessarily what you're reading most of the time. And you're just going to agree to everything because you want to do whatever it was you clicked the button to do. And you think you need to say okay to let that happen. And that's a valid assumption, despite the fact that it may or may not end well for you. So that's how it goes. Are we good here, John? Time to move on to some cool stuff that you folks have found. We didn't find any of this stuff. The first is going to be from Pilot Pete, and Pilot Pete didn't send an audio comment in. No, he didn't send an email in. He didn't do anything. He's sitting right here, and rumors to his canine heritage are mostly exaggerated. He's actually a real life person. He's sitting right here. Hi, Pete. How are you?
Great, great. Thanks
good.
For letting me sit in.
Yeah. So what'd you find,
privilege.
Pete?
A really cool little app. It's the best part about it is its price. It's free. It was written by a guy out in Cal State Fresno. His name's Nathan Sheldon. It's called Encrypt This. It's something that you could do manually with a bunch of steps using Disk Utility. But essentially what it does is allows you to drag a file or number of files or number of folders, if you choose, right onto the icon that he created, and it will create an encrypted disk image, which you then use your password, and it critiques your password as Disk Utility does, whether it's fair, weak, strong, excellent. And once you're done to mount the disk image, you need that password. Don't ever lose it. You'll never find a back door in. There's no way in. But it's not to be confused also. If you're going to do a Yahoo or Google search, it's not to be confused with the Firefox extension, which is a derivative of the Grease Monkey script, Encrypt This. But it's a standalone little, I think it's about 66 kilobyte download. It's real small, but real powerful, real quick. And if you need to send somebody some files, tell them a password over the telephone, send them some sensitive files encrypted. So if they get intercepted, yeah, it's not a bad little way to get some security on something that you would otherwise send in the clear through the email, which you don't really want to do.
Right. So it's important to note with Encrypt This that it actually creates, I think, and it may or may not be clear, but I think this is a series of stitched together Apple scripts or something, because the end result is a standard .dmg file, and you don't need Encrypt This to decrypt it, right?
Right. You just need the password, and I guess the system requirement is that you have 10.3.9 or later. So any of the Panther, Tiger, or Leopard operating systems, it should handle fine according to the documentation with it.
Cool.
So, and I guess you guys are going to put a link in the show notes for that.
We do. Yeah. That's how we roll here. Do you have any questions about Encrypt This, since we have the caller, as it were, sitting right here next to us, John?
It couldn't be simpler. I looked it over. So, and if the guy takes donations, hey, throw him a few bucks, you know.
Yeah.
People spend time to make our lives easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, shareware is a wonderful thing to support. And like you said, John, if it's free, throw him a couple of bucks. It's a good thing. So thanks, Pete. Andrew wrote in with something that really kind of hit home for me, and I bet for you, John, being a, you know, someone who just went out and bought a new laptop with a utility called Smart Sleep. And basically, in his words, it installs itself as a pref pane and modifies the sleep behavior of MacBook Pros and presumably MacBooks so that if they have a sufficient charge remaining in their battery, they will simply sleep. But when the charge reaches a certain level, and the default is 20% or 20 minutes left, they will sleep and hibernate. Now, the difference is that when a computer is asleep, the battery is used to save the contents of RAM and keep it fresh and alive. Hibernate, it actually takes the RAM image, the whole RAM image, and dumps it off to disk and then almost shuts the computer down. So it burns less power that way. But of course, it takes longer to arise from sleep, if you will, because it's got to reload this whole RAM image back in. There are various utilities out there that will let you tell it to do one or the other, disable hibernation completely or always hibernate. But with this, it's actually doing it sort of on the fly based on how much battery power you've got, which seems like a good approach to me. Did you check this out, John? Did you look at this a whole lot?
Yeah, I guess that's going to have to be my introduction to the Intel world. Is that, you know, my current machine, of course, doesn't do this.
Oh, that's right.
PowerBook G4 just sleeps and wakes up lickety split. On the other hand, yeah, if my juice runs out, then my juice runs out. So, right. So yeah, I guess it's something to get used to. But I think the Windows machines had the same sort of thing. Windows machines hibernates. My Dell, I do sleep. I close the cover. It pulses. I have to be sure because it seems for whatever reason the Dell will not last as long. Whereas, you know, at least the PowerBook, I mean, I could have it sitting for a week and it would be pulsing its light and it wouldn't run the battery down. The Dells, I find, can't last too long. I think they spend, I guess that's as you pointed out, you know, if you're sleeping versus hibernating, I guess sleeping, I guess, takes slightly more juice.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, it would have to because it's got to keep the RAM powered, right? Our computers aren't running on flash memory, so
yep.
They need constant juice. Even if it's a trickle, it's something. Yeah, so.
Yeah, it just always seemed to me that the Macs had an ability to last relatively longer in a
stamina.
Sleep mode.
It's all about stamina, John.
I don't know.
With that, we'll bring in our band full of stamina here and hope that it doesn't start crackling over there. But I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Of course, Michael Johnston of iPhoneAlley.com fame will have converted this show to you to AAC for you. And bandwidth is provided by CashFly. That's the place that you download this show from, no matter where you are in the world. They've got points of presence all over the place and make it get down to you lickety split and make our lives really, really easy in the process. So that's that.
Yeah, I'm going to be all over the world soon.
Yeah, that's right. So we got a lot of travel going on. So I'm going to be next week. I'm down in Austin for South by Southwest partially. And also, you know, Backbeat Media, we have an office down there, and I can't wait to get back down there. I haven't been down there since we opened the office in September.
We'll tell them you're making a surprise visit.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, they'll appreciate that. But I think I plan next Monday, if we can do the show here, I should be able to do it around the same time, John. And I plan to do that from the Backbeat Media office so that I'm not relying on, you know, hotel bandwidth issues because... You know, after my last experience trying to rely on hotel bandwidth, well, let's just say that I'm happy that I pay for dedicated bandwidth in our office down there in Austin.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, and then I'm that week leaving for going on vacation with some friends to France.
Look,
if anybody
hasn't
traveled, actually, if anybody's in Paris, let me know. Fortunately, my friend speaks some French, and I'm sure I can pick up the basics. I know we, okay?
There it is. That's it. So you're there. Okay. You're there with basically the week of the 17th, maybe arriving a couple days before. Is that right?
It's going to be like a week and a half about. So
good for you. Wow. That's awesome. Never been.
I got to take my vacation. I mean, the company I've been with, I get. Do I get four? I think I get 4 weeks now. Maybe five.
Wow. I got to get
a
new
company
gig.
For a long time, you know. Yeah.
That's great, man. That's awesome.
Anyways, that'll be fun. I looked. There's no Apple Store in France, apparently. So
really?
But one of my goals, I want to take the really fast train. They have a really super crazy fast train over there.
Is it faster than the Acela?
Yeah, it's like I think they measured it at 350 miles per hour.
Holy smokes. Yeah, that's faster than the Acela.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they, I guess, you know, put a little more forethought into designing the rail network.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, clearly. Yeah. Yeah. Although I have to say, the last time I was on the Acela, it was coming from New York to Boston, and we were somewhere between New Haven and Providence where the train is just cooking. But it's late at night and the train was packed. There was a canceled train prior. Long story short, I was sitting next to a guy who that morning had woken up in England. Right. He flew over the Acela. He was taking it up to Boston and then somebody was going to pick him up and bring him up actually deeper into New Hampshire. And at one point, he's like, you know, my problem with American trains is that they go so slow. Now, at this point in time, the train's doing about $1.50, right?
And that's about the most you're going to get in the Acela.
Yeah. And I said to him,
you run the stretch, which is cool.
And I said to him, I said, how fast do you want it to go? He's like, well, what are we doing now? He's like, we must be doing, you know, what, 50 or 60 miles an hour? And I said, no, we're doing about 150. He's like, how are we doing 150? He's like, wow, that's fine. He's like, I've been in faster, but that's great. He's like, it's such a smooth ride. And I'm like, look, we might not get everything right here in America, but we understand comfort. You know, that's the first thing. Those trains, when they're cooking, it's a smooth ride. So you know, there you go. That's my tangent for the night.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed this, though. The ultimate speed record. So France is number two here. The ultimate speed record, Japan had a train. I think they got the maglev trains, magnetic levitation, 361 back in 2003.
I don't know. Oh, okay. Pilot Pete is,
they got one in Shanghai too, that takes you from downtown out to the airport. And
okay.
It really rocks.
Huh.
Yeah. It's over 300 knots. I was in a cab one day when one blew right overhead and it got my attention.
I don't know if I'm comfortable going that. I realize that they go out of their way to make these things safe, but still, that's intense, man. All right. The podcast marketplace, of course, the A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebone Software, one free download from Audible at audiblepodcast.com/MacGeekGab, and PDF pen from Smile on My Mac, and of course, harman-etravel.com. Backbeat Media Podcast Network is the place to go if you want to get your ad here. And we got to tell them how to get in touch with us. I blew it again. I didn't do it at all during the middle of the show. So go, John.
206-666-GEEK, which is
4335.
Ooh, good one.
Thanks.
What else? MacGeekApp.com, I guess?
Yeah, that'll get you there. Feedback.
Skype.
Yep. You can Skype to MacGeekGab, and then, of course, feedback at MacGeekGab.com will get your email to us. Any and all of the above are totally acceptable. We love to hear from you. And
comments are cool.
Yeah.
There's like almost 150.
At iTunes, is that right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. I like to hear that. That's great. Thank you, folks, very much for the comments. Thanks so much for staying subscribed and really making this a joy for us to do. I don't know about you, John. I'm guessing it's the same, but I actually look forward to this every week. It's not work to me at all. I'd do it anyway, and I'm happy to be here doing it. So thank you very much.
Ditto.
That was heartfelt. All right. I think with that we can wrap this one up and see how fast this iMac wants to convert this puppy and blast it up to CashFly servers. Although, of course, the iMac doesn't make Comcast go any faster. Be nice if it could.
Yeah, we'll just, borrow some of your neighbor's band.
That's what I need to do. If I do that, though, I just got to make sure that I, don't get caught.
Made up.